Siobhan Bhagavatam is Vijaya. So today, of course, is Lord Varaha's appearance day. Lord Varaha is the incarnation of the Lord as a boar. That doesn't mean he was boring. That means he was a giant pig. You understand? That doesn't mean he was a pig in the sense of eating too much. Because it's described that Lord Krishna appears in each and every species of life as an incarnation. And we have to remember, of course, that Advaita Chuta Nadu Ananta Rupamadhyam Puranam Purusham Navayovanam Cha. It's the same person. It's not a different person. And Jayadev Goswami in the Gita Govinda makes this very clear in his famous Dasha Avatar Shlokas, in which he says, Kesha Drita, Nadahari Rupa, Shukara Rupa, which is Lord Varaha. Shukara is another name for a boar or a big pig. A boar is actually a pig with the tusks on it. The ordinary pigs you see running around here are not boars. They're pigs. But a boar is a pig with giant tusks like that. And I remember when I was young, a little story about my own life. I went to meditate and do yoga in the Bahamas on a deserted island. We landed a plane right there, you know, right on the, it was sort of like a semi-road there. And actually my father dropped me off, and there was no one around for like maybe 40 miles or 30 miles. And I thought I would meditate and realize the absolute truth. I was about 20 years old. And so we had a little house there. We had a whole estate, actually, in the islands. And so I was alone at night, you know, no one within like 30, 40 miles. And this beautiful beach and everything like that, you know, pink beaches and everything. I thought, this is paradise, you know, I'll just become perfectly self-realized. But what I didn't realize is at night there were boars there. And you could hear the tusk, they're called tuskers also. You could hear, tusk also means elephant, but you could hear them roaring at night. So I was just sitting there thinking I was going to meditate and be peaceful. I was shivering in fright because I didn't want to walk outside. And we had, the problem is we didn't have, you know, the electricity was a generator. So in order to start the generator, I had to walk outside about 100 meters. And I didn't want to do that at night because all the boars were going, and so there I was, you know, attempting to be God, not Krishna conscious at that time, but at least spiritually conscious, something like that. Shaking all night long. Because they couldn't come in the house, but still, they couldn't turn on the electricity either. Oh. It's just like when a Westerner goes, tries to be fearless. And then during the day, because there was no one else around, I was afraid of going swimming, even though it was a beautiful beach. Because you're really not supposed to swim. The first thing you learn when you learn swimming is you're not supposed to swim where there's no other person around, alone, even if you're the most expert swimmer in the world. And in addition to that, to the boar, there were these things with fins on them going back and forth in the water. They're called tiburones, or sharks. And they were going back and forth. And here I was in the most beautiful place in the three worlds. I couldn't enjoy it during the day, and I couldn't enjoy it at night, and I was trying to meditate, and I couldn't.
Is that the
absolute truth? Yeah, well, after that, I thought, I mean, it's a funny story. After that, I thought, no, that was before the Hare Krishna. After that, I thought, well, maybe I should go to Europe to find out what life is all about. Because I thought they have some culture in Europe. You understand? So then I went, took a plane from Nassau. Nassau is one part of the Bahamas. And there were very cheap flights from Nassau to Europe at that time, to a place called Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. You know, Luxembourg. This is before I joined the movement. So I went to Luxembourg. And then Luxembourg is a tiny little country. Not as small. The smallest country is Vatican City in Europe. Anywhere in the world, actually. Maybe. I'm not sure if that's the smallest. That's also, anyway, there's other guys. What? No, Balkans aren't the smallest. The Vatican City is actually the smallest country in the world. And then, maybe it's another small. No, I think that's small. So anyways, so then I went from there to France, because, you know, France, they have culture and everything like that. And I had spoke, at that time I spoke French. So I went to France, tried out my French, got yelled at by the gendarme, I mean the policeman there, for not speaking perfect French. I said, "Où est la gare?" And then, where's the train station? So then I thought, well, let me go to Marseille. Maybe there's some, you know, because I thought the seat of culture is Europe. So then I went, that's your phone. Then I went to Marseille, ran into some other Americans there, and discovered that all the Americans were interested in when they went to Europe was just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And all they were talking about were women, you know, the French girls. So I just thought, this is going on in the United States, eating, sleeping. You know, it was a little realization of Krishna consciousness there. This is, I said, this is even in the United States, there's eating, sleeping, mating, defending. I paid all this money to come to Europe. Just to see, I thought the Europeans, you know, they'd be like real spiritual and real philosophical. You know, because I had studied Greek philosophy. I thought everybody was like Socrates and Aristotle in Europe. But I found out it was just another, it was another version of the same thing. So then after, I think it was 4 days in Europe, I hop on another plane to come back to the Bahamas. I don't know, maybe 5 days or something like that. That was my first trip to Europe because I was looking for something, you know. And then eventually I came across Prabhupada's books, and then that convinced me that was what I was looking for. It wasn't in Europe and it wasn't in the Bahamas meditating. I didn't even know what to meditate on at that time. It was just like, it's like silent meditation, you make the mind peaceful. And my mind wasn't peaceful because of all the boars and the sharks. You know, the land was dangerous and the water was dangerous. So Krishna gave me some interesting experiences. Everything I tried other than Krishna consciousness didn't work. It's amazing, isn't it? Okay. So now we'll speak about Lord Boar. So this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, chapter 13. We're going to be reading some of the verses from there. And of course, as I mentioned before, Krishna appears in every single species of life for a variety of reasons. One reason, and it's the same Krishna, but one reason is that basically Prabhupada said he comes to give association to other living entities in that same species. Another reason is he likes to have fun. Just like children, they dress up and they do different dramatic things, and even adults do that. When you have that japa retreat, you know, you dress up as Radharani. What were you this year?
Krishna.
You were Krishna.
Well, thanks to you saying I wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, it is. Thank God. So you dress up as Radharani or Krishna, or somebody maybe dresses as a cow or something like that. So Krishna, he likes to do that too. Mm-hmm. He's an expert dramatist. And you can read some of his dramas, like the Dagya Madhava, Lita Madhava, in which he exhibits, he and Radharani and all their associates, they're much more dramatic, much more expert than William Shakespeare is. You know, and a lot of what are called double entendres. Double entendres means you can understand things at least two ways. You know, like actually like when Radharani says to Krishna, you know, where is your clothes, you know, where's your vasu? And vasa. And Krishna takes it a different way. He says, you know, where's your residence? And Krishna says, my residence is in your eyes. You know, that in the Nectar of Devotion is that statement. He says to Radharani, she said, oh no. And then she asks him, where did you spend the night? And he turns it around and says, like someone is kidnapped at night. And he says, how is it possible for someone to kidnap at night? So there's all this really dramatic, interesting stuff, and especially the poetry of Rupa Goswami and other great Vaishnavas illustrates this. So Krishna likes it. He likes to act like a boar. And the incidental thing is, not even the primary reason Krishna appears like that, is Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. To annihilate the miscreants and save the devotees and establish religious principles. That's incidental. That's not, in other words, it's a secondary purpose that can be accomplished by other personalities. What's that?
Sometimes the Prabhupada says that below the human form of life, there are a lot of living entities can't realize Krishna.
Yeah.
But
when Krishna comes, Krishna gives them special ability.
Also, you see examples in the Bhagavatam and other places where other living entities, like the dog that approached...
Stephen went on to say, yeah.
But even before that, the dog that approached the sacrifice of Vrishabharata's son.
Yeah, yeah.
So are there just...
There's a general rule and there's exceptions.
Okay, so there's some exceptions.
Yeah, there's always exceptions. Can we put out that incense? I have trouble breathing. Okay, so now we're going to read. These are just the verses I'm reading now. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, after hearing all these most virtuous topics from the sage Maitreya, Vidura inquired further on the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead whom he adored. These are Prabhupada's translations. Vidura said, O great sage, what did Swayambhuva, the great son of Brahma, do after obtaining his very loving wife? O best of the virtuous, the original king of kings, Manu, was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead Hari, and it is thus worth hearing of his sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I am very eager to hear. Persons who hear from a spiritual master with great labor and for a long time must hear from the mouths of pure devotees about the character and activities of pure devotees. Pure devotees always think within their hearts of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who awards his devotees liberation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna was pleased to place his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura because Vidura was very meek and gentle. The great sage Maitreya was very pleased with Vidura's words, and being influenced by his spirit, he attempted to speak. The sage Maitreya said to Vidura, after the appearance, his appearance, Manu, the father of mankind, along with his wife, thus addressed the reservoir of Vedic wisdom, Brahma, with obeisances and folded hands. He said, you are the father of all living entities and the source of their subsistence because they are all born of you. Please order us how we may be able to render service unto you. O most worshipable one, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Lord Brahma said, my dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. You hear that, Padma?
Yes.
That's for you. Since you are my very obedient son and daughter, I ask you... I mean, no, but this is a request. Your father's not giving you. I ask you to beget children qualified like yourself in the womb of your wife. Rule the world in pursuance of the principles of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of God, and thus worship the Lord by performance of yajna. O King, if you can give proper protection to the living beings in this material world, that will be the best service for me. This is very interesting. That will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the master of the senses will be very pleased with you. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardhan, Lord Krishna, is the form to accept all the results of sacrifice. If he is not satisfied, then one's labor for advancement is futile. He is the ultimate self, and therefore one who does not satisfy him certainly neglects his own interests. Sri Manu said, O all-powerful Lord, O killer of all sins, I shall abide by your order. Now please let me know my place and that of the living entities born of me. O master of the demigods, please attempt to lift the earth which is merged in the great water, because it is the dwelling place for all living entities. It can be done by your endeavor and by the mercy of the Lord. Sri Maitreya said, thus seeing the earth merged in the water, Brahma gave his attention for a long time as to how it could be lifted. Brahma thought, while I've been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge. and has gone down to the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in the matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his... Pardon the what?
Nostril.
The measurement of the creature was no more than the upper portion of the thumb of Lord Brahma, of course. Oh, descendant of Bart, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation as gigantic as a great elephant. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with great Brahmins like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. First of all, this boar was seen as no bigger than the tip of a thumb, and within a moment he was as large as the stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu? While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent supreme personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated brahmanas by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. When the great sages and thinkers who were residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Roar, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. Playing like a great elephant, he entered the water after roaring again and replied to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by what, Padma? Yes, that's good, by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devoted brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me into two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were sharp like arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of the creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Boar very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then, his anger glowing like the Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon. Which demon?
Hiranyaksha.
That's good. Although he tried to fight with the Lord. Thereupon, Lord Boar killed the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. The Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree. And thus the sages, headed by Brahma, in other words, he assumed the original complexion he has as Krishna, and the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the supreme personality of Godhead and offered respectful obeisances unto him. All the sages uttered with great respect, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories to you. You are moving in your form of the personified Vedas, and in the hair holes of your body the oceans are submerged. For certain reasons, to uplift the earth, you have now assumed the form of the boar. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri, and others are in the touch of your skin. Your bodily hairs are the kusha grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter, and your four legs are four kinds of fruitive activities. O Lord, your tongue is the plate of sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating place of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice known as soma. And whatever you chew is known as agnihotra. Moreover, Lord, the repetition of your appearance is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for the three desires, and your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. So that's dharma, artha, kama, dharma, artha, kama, and then moksha is mentioned as the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation, as purushcharya. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship. And your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. O Lord, your semen is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performance of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agnishtoma sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by Yajnas only. That's nice. Nice description. Let's see how many pages we go on for this. Okay, yeah, just one more page. O Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized by the pure mind freed from all visible and invisible material contamination. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you as the supreme spiritual master of knowledge and devotional service. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. O Lord, just as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, the earth is your wife and you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you've invested your own potency, just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the Orani wood. So it's described here as a question for all of you. The earth is his wife, and the Lord, of course, is the husband, and he's the Supreme Father. So when he lifted the earth up with his tusks, and the earth is his wife, there must have been a child born at that time. And there was not you, Gopal. Who was the child who was born? Well, we just called Boma at that time. And Boma, by bad association, he became Bomasura. So even though he was a nice guy, like we talk about, for children there's two things, nature and nurture, right? Nature means what you're born with, and nurture means what happens afterwards, you know, how the kid's brought up. So even if you have a really sweet kid, you know, Krishna's kid must be real sweet mm-hmm. in the beginning. And you have a perfect mother and perfect father. You know, they were perfectly Krishna conscious. I mean, of course, Krishna is always perfectly Krishna conscious. And Bhumi, or Bhudevi, and she's worshipped in South India as Bhudevi, is perfectly Krishna conscious. So he was a good kid. Yet, by bad association, he became a demon. And what happened is that sort of Bhumi sort of knew what was going to happen. And she said to Lord Vishnu or Lord Boar, she said, promise me, don't kill my kid. You know, even if he becomes a demon. And Krishna said to her, real tricky, you know, he's usually very tricky, he said, don't worry. If you don't give me permission, I will not kill him. And so he's real tricky like that. You know, I mean, Krishna just has his sleight of hand or sleight of words is just amazing. So then later on, when Krishna went to rescue all the princesses that were kidnapped by this Bomasura, Krishna took with him Satyabhama. And Bhumi happens to be an expansion of Satyabhama. So Satyabhama, but her mood is different. You know, mood is a little bit different. Bhama also means someone who is a little angry, unsubmissive, and stuff like that. There's two types of wives and two types of gopis. there's the right-handed and left-handed. Right-handed are the real submissive wives. And left-handed wives are like, they talk back, they argue, they're angry, they're jealous, and everything like that. I'm not going to ask you women who are married what type of wives you are. But when Padma gets married, I know what type she'll be. She's going to be bomb. Padma bomb.
That's smart.
Isn't it? She definitely will be like that. I mean, there's no way she's going to be like, yes, sir, whatever you want.
You do it.
So, anyway, so Satyabhama was like that. So, anyway, so she also nagged Krishna quite a bit when she wanted what? A Parijata flower. She got a whole tree. She wanted a tree. She said, Rukmini can have a flower. I want a tree. You love her more than me, and prove that you love me more. Yeah, so there's a certain amount of envy and jealousy there in the spiritual world. Like we were talking about the other day, that everything we have here is present in the spiritual world. And the other day I was so shocked to find out that they get drunk in the spiritual world. I mean, just like that, when Krishna goes out to meet the gopis, they have this honey liquor that they take, fermented drink.
And their eyes are red.
And their eyes turn red, and they're stuttering. Where's the moon? And they're pouring it on the ground because they can't figure out how to hit the cup. So it's quite interesting how the spiritual world is what we consider to be an inebriety or a fault is there. Anyway, it's really interesting. So anyway, so what happens when Krishna went to attack Bulbasaur? He took Satyabhama with him. And Bulbasaur happened to be attacking both of them. They were both in the back of Garuda. And Satyabhama said, kill him! And because Satyabhama is the source of Bhumi, Krishna said, thank you for giving me permission. I was waiting for that one. And so Krishna kept his promise. He was able to kill Bulbasaur. It's interesting how tricky Krishna is, isn't it? He'll find a way to do whatever he wants, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
And even if he has to break his promise, like he did to protect Arjuna against Grandfather Bhishma's attack, then he'll break his promise. So Krishna's not even bound by his promise. Right?
He's
not bound by anything. He's independent.
He kept his promise. The great thing isn't necessarily a weapon.
He grabbed it and he was rushing, and he would have attacked him. And not to interfere. He promised not to interfere in the battle.
To raise weapons.
Raise weapons. So the wheel was actually... And there was another time he raised the citizen chakra. It happened two times. That's it. The Mahabharata story is actually a little bit more elaborate than the Bhagavatam story. What happened is that another time, Arjuna was just fighting like a wimp. And he said... You know, Arjuna was just like the arrow... And he wasn't fighting seriously. And Krishna said, if you're not going to fight serious against this guy, I'm going to kill him. And he grabbed his citizen chakra.
Yeah.
So that's a weapon, for sure. So Krishna... So Krishna... he was ready to use it. And Arjuna, it's described that Arjuna grabbed his leg. And Arjuna actually was dragged halfway across the battlefield.
That's because he wanted to protect Krishna's promise.
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted... So Krishna ultimately kept his promise, but... He was ready to break it. Because Bhishma, he said, I'm promising to kill Arjuna tomorrow, or Krishna will have to break his promise to protect Arjuna. So he said, and so also Krishna wanted to keep Grandfather Bhishma's promise. Because Bhishma had promised to kill unless such and such happened. It's interesting. Than his own promise. Yeah. So Krishna, that's why Krishna says, Konteha pratijanihi nami bhakti pranashati. To Arjuna, he says, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. And Prabhupada comments that people will not believe Krishna. So Krishna has his devotee make the promise. Because Krishna's tricky and liar. And
another time Krishna interfered in the battle.
What was that?
Bhishma. That's before Krishna raised the wheel.
Yeah.
Bhishma was fighting really, 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 really hard. And there was an arrow that was meant to take off the head of Arjuna.
Yeah.
Actually, it's two times. And he put his foot down and the chariot went poof.
Yep.
And knocked off the crown. And there was another time where Krishna had to stand up. So the arrow hit him instead of Arjuna.
And there was another time when Krishna had the sun covered by clouds.
Mm.
With Jayadrath. Arjuna was fighting with Jayadrath. So Krishna interfered a whole bunch. Yeah, he wasn't.
Yes, I won't interfere.
Yeah, I mean, and the deal was made that one side would get Krishna's army and the other side would get Krishna, but Krishna wouldn't interfere or fight in any way. So they even made a deal, you know. Whoever Krishna saw first in the morning would get to make the choice. And Arjuna chose Krishna, even though Krishna said he wasn't going to fight or interfere. And then Duryodhana, he was in ecstasy. Now I get the arm, and Krishna's not going to fight anyway. But Shakuni knew about these tricks. Shakuni was actually more intelligent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In a devious way.
Mm-hmm.
He understood Krishna's tricks.
Mm-hmm. He's more advanced. So Duryodhana is like Kali personified?
Yeah.
And Shakuni was.
Dwarpa.
Yeah. He's a little more intelligent.
Yeah, he was much more intelligent. Shakuni was, I mean, extremely intelligent. He just called Krishna a trickster. All right, so let's go on. So, let's see. So we talked about the birth of Omasura. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would deliver the earth from the water is not very wonderful for you. However, because you act most wonderfully in the creation of this universe. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, the Jana, Tapas, and such a locus, but still we have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs by the shaking of your body. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful qualities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly a nonsense. Everyone in this world is... That's pretty interesting. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. The great sage Maitreya said, the Lord being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves, placed them in the water. In this manner, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat in the water, he returned to his own abode. If one hears and describes in devotional service attitude, this auspicious narration of Lord Bor, which is worthy of description, the Lord who is within the heart of everyone is very pleased. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands everything else to be insignificant. One who engages himself in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord himself who is seated in everyone's heart. Who other than one who is not a human being can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of God's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? Now we go to the 18th chapter. Previously we were reading the 13th chapter. We skip ahead to the 18th chapter, the third canto, and we're going to hear about the demon. So Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya paid little heed to the words of Varuna because he had previously challenged Varuna. He was looking for someone to fight with. My dear Vidura, he learned from Narada the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of God. In other words, Varuna said to him when he challenged Varuna, we're getting old right now, you know, we can't fight with you, you know, just it's not appropriate, we're not a worthy opponent for you. But there's someone who can really whip you, and that is God. And so he asks Narada Muni, where is God? Something like Hiranyakashipu asked, you know, where is your God? And he hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. He saw there the all-powerful personality of God in his born incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the edges of his tusks and robbing him of his splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed. Oh, an amphibious beast. That means an animal that can work, live on the land or on the water or in the water. The demon addressed the Lord, O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar. Just hear me. The earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You rascal. He's talking to Krishna right now. You have been nourished by your enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. O fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. The demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain, but seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with his female companion when assailed by an alligator. The demon, who had golden hair, in other words, he was blonde, on his head and fearful tusks, gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, "Are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures." The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. The demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words, and in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. The personality of Godhead said, "Indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you." You can see they're insulting each other too, which is quite interesting. "One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death. Certainly we have stolen the charge of the inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time because, having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I have no place to go. You are supposed to be the commander of many foot soldiers, and now you may take prompt steps to overthrow us. Give up all your foolish talk and wipe out the cares of your kith and kin by slaying us. One may be proud, yet he does not deserve a seat in an assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised word." Sri Maitreya said, "The demon, being thus challenged by the personality of God, became angry and agitated and trembled in anger like a challenged cobra, hissing indignantly, all of his senses shaken by wrath. The demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mace. The Lord, however, by moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mace blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The personality of Godhead now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, who bit his lip in rage, took up his mace again, and began to repeatedly brandish it about." Just like swinging. "Then with his mace, the Lord struck the enemy on the right of his brow. But since the demon was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidur, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mace. In this way, the demon Haryaksha," sometimes he's described as Haryaksha, "and the Lord, the personality of Godhead, struck each other with their huge maces, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was a keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of each other's pointed maces, and each grew more and more enraged by the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of a cow. A descendant of Kuru, Brahma, the most independent demigod of the universe, accompanied by his followers, came to see the terrible fight for the sake of the world between the demon and the personality of Godhead, who appeared in the form of the boar. After arriving at the place of combat, Brahma, the leader of thousands of sages and transcendentalists, saw the demon, who had attained such unprecedented power that no one could fight with him. Brahma then addressed Narayan, who was assuming the form of the boar for the first time. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, this demon has proved to be a constant pinprick to the demigods, the Brahmins, the cows, and innocent persons who are spotless and always dependent upon worshipping your lotus feet. He has become a source of fear by unnecessarily harassing them. Since he has attained a boon from me, he has become a demon, always searching for a proper combatant, wandering all over the universe for this infamous purpose." Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, there is no need to play with a serpentine demon who is always very skilled in conjuring tricks and is arrogant, self-sufficient, and most wicked." Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, you are infallible. Please kill this demon before the demoniac hour arrives and he presents another formidable approach favorable to him. You can kill him by your internal potency without doubt. My Lord, the darkest evening which covers the world is fast approaching. Since you are the soul of all souls, kindly kill him and win victory for the demigods." The auspicious period known as Abhijit, which is most opportune for victory, commenced at midday and has all but passed. Therefore, in the interest of your friends, please dispose of this formidable foe quickly. The demon, luckily for us, has come of his own accord. His death ordained by you, therefore, exhibiting your ways, kill him in the duel and establish the world in peace. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. The Lord, who had appeared from the nostril of Brahma, sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of the enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. In other words, he said, you know, it's against the rules to hit you. So, you know, pick up your mace. You know. That really infuriates people. Like when Lord Ramchandra was the second or third day of the battle, he defeated Ravana, and Ravana came out prematurely. And he said, so basically, Ravana was taken off the battlefield by his charioteer at that time. And Lord Ramchandra didn't pursue him and didn't continue the fight. He said, I can see you're tired. You need a little rest. You need to go home and take it easy for a while and then come back and fight some other day. Well, that really makes a fighter angry, isn't it? That's nice. So here the demon just said, you know, you put down your weapon, pick it up again. It's no problem. In other words, I'm not really worried about being killed by you. I can handle you. But I just want to give you a fair shake while I'm killing you. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground, a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis. The personality of Godhead acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan chakra disc. And that's not really fair either. You know, it's completely unfair. He should have just kept the club and forgot about the disc. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hands and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti, there issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who were witnessing from the airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you! Pray, dispatch him! Play no more with him!" When the demons saw, in other words, many of them didn't know it was the Supreme Personality of God of Vishnu. They just said, "Wow, this big guy, big boar, is fighting with the demon. I hope he wins." When the demon saw the personality of Godhead, with eyes just like lotus petals, standing in a position before him, armed with a Sudarshana discus, his senses were overpowered by indignation. He began to hiss like a serpent and bit his lip in great resentment. Like, isn't it? That's how the demon, who had fearful tusks, stared at the personality of Godhead as though to burn him. Springing into the air, he aimed his mace at the Lord, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain." O saintly Vidura, while his enemy looked on, the Lord in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knocked down the mace with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. It's like a hurricane. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Challenged in these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once again loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying toward him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of the birds, would seize the serpents. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance.
Because he peed himself.
Yes. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality body. He now took a trident. Just turn it off. You're not that famous. He took now a trident which was as rapacious as a flaming fire and hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against a holy Brahmin. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident shone brightly in the sky. The personality got it, however, tore it to pieces with his discus, Sudarshan, which has a sharp edged wing, even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. The demon was enraged when his trident was cut to pieces by the discus of the Supreme Personality Godhead. He therefore advanced toward the Lord and, roaring aloud, struck his hard fist against the Lord's broad chest, which bore the mark of Srivatsa. Then he went out of sight. Hit in this manner by the demon, Ovidura, the Lord, who had appeared as the firstborn, did not feel the least quaking in any part of his body any more than an elephant would when struck with a wreath of flowers. The demon, however, employed many conjuring tricks against the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of Yogamaya. At the sight of this, the people were filled with alarm and thought that the dissolution of the universe was near. Fierce winds began to blow in all directions, spreading darkness, occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. The luminaries in outer space disappeared due to the skies being overcast with masses of clouds which were accompanied by lightning and thunder. The sky rained pus, hair, blood, stool, urine, and bones. Yuck. O sinless Vidura, mountains discharged weapons of various kinds, and naked demonesses armed with tridents appeared with their hair hanging loose. Cruel and savage slogans were uttered by hosts of ruffian yakshas and rakshasas, in which four-letter words, who all either marched on foot or rode on horses, elephants, or chariots. The Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifices, now discharged his beloved Sudarshan, which was capable of dispersing the magical forces displayed by the demon. At that very moment, a shudder suddenly ran through the heart of Diti, the mother of Aranyaksha. She recalled the words of her husband, Kashyapa, and the blood flowed from her breast, because Kashyapa said that your two sons, they're going to be demons, and they're going to be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And later on, she actually took a vow to kill Indra, because she thought, for Indra's sake, you know, God's doing this. I can't kill God, so at least I'll kill Indra, who's causing all this to happen. And she sort of made a mistake in her vow towards the end, when she took rest, when she wasn't supposed to take rest. And instead, her sons became the friends of Indra, and Indra cut them up into 49 pieces. That's another story. That's not appropriate to tell right now. She recalled the words of her husband, Kashyapa, and blood flowed from her breasts. When the demon saw his magic forces dispelled, he once again came into the presence of the Supreme Personality, Godhead Keshava, and full of rage, he tried to embrace him within his arms to crush him. But to his amazement, he found the Lord standing outside the circle of his arms. The demon now began to strike the Lord with his hard fists, but Lord Adhoksaja slapped him in the root of the ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hit the demon Vritra. Though struck indifferently by the Lord. Indifferently. The conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets. His arms and legs broken, and the hair on his head scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree, uprooted by the wind. Aja, Brahma, and others arrived at the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground biting his lip. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who could meet such a blessed death?" Brahma continued, "He was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies meditate upon in seclusion and mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, the crest jewel of Diti's sons has cast off his mortal coil. These two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions." So which, what were those births?
What were the births?
Yadinath, the birth. Yeah. Yeah. Shishupal and who else? Dantavakra. And later Jagannath Mahadev, so they can go back to Godhead. That's nice, isn't it? So, the demigods address the Lord, "All obeisances to you. You're the enjoyer of all sacrifice, and you have assumed the form of the boar in pure goodness for the purpose of maintaining the world. Fortunately for us, this demon who is a torment to the world has been slain by you, and we too, Lord, are now at ease in devotion your lotus feet." Maitreya continued, "After thus killing the most formidable demon, Aranyaksha, the Supreme Lord, the origin of the boar species, returned to his own abode, where there is always an uninterrupted festival. The Lord was praised by all the demigods headed by Brahma." Maitreya continued, "I have explained to you the personality of God is coming down as the first boar incarnation, killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master." Sutta Goswami continued, "My dear Brahmana, Shatta, Vidura, the great devotee of the Lord achieved transcendental bliss by hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the authoritative source of the sage Kosharava Maitreya, and he was very pleased." So Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi. "What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Srivatsa, people may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees whose fame is immortal. The personality of Godhead delivered the king of the elephants, who was attacked by an alligator, and who meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord." What was the name of the king of the elephants? Gajendra. "At that time, the female elephants who accompanied him were crying. Boo-hoo. And the Lord saved them from the impending danger. What grateful soul is there would not render his loving service to such great master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Lord can easily be pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection, though the unrighteous man finds it very difficult to propitiate him. O Brahmanas, anyone who hears, chants, or takes pleasure in this wonderful narration of the killing of Aranyaksha demon by the Lord, who appeared as the first boar in order to deliver the world, is at once delivered from the results of sinful activities, even the killing of a Brahmana. This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all the objects of one's desires. On the field of battle, it promotes the strength of one's vital organs and organs of action." See, if one's practicing karate, it's good to listen to this beforehand. "One who listens to it at the last moment of his life is transferred to the supreme abode of the Lord, O dear Shonaka." The Sutta Goswami is speaking to Shonaka Rishi at that particular point. So, this is called a Shruti Pala. That means the fruit of hearing. So, this is a standard thing that occurs at the end of many, many chapters in the Vedic literatures. It says, you know, anyone who hears this regularly, recites this regularly, this. That's a common thing you'll find at the end of chapters. So any questions? What? Yeah.
In the Life of Tulsi Devi book, it also talks about
Sankachuda.
Sankachuda,
yeah.
It's a
different Sankachuda.
This is Sridhar.
That's Sridhar, yeah.
Sridhar.
Yeah, I don't remember, but it was
over
one of the...
Sridhar. Yeah, it's getting over that, as we know too well.
Yeah, the one here was Sridhar.
Yeah.
And the other one was Sudan, I think.
Yeah.
The one where the Tulsi Devi story was different. There's a different Shankarachuda. Yeah,
it's a different Shankarachuda.
Oh, so Shankarachuda, who was in the reading from yesterday, was Sri Ram?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Sri Ram.
Oh, so where was Sri Ram?
Took a vacation.
No, he was there too. It's described that.
Oh, expand or something. Like
yeah, expand. Yeah. It's described that the when he was killed, the soul was visible to everybody.
Entered into Sri Ram.
That's right.
That's right.
And it burned back into his body.
That's right.
And Krishna's weapon remains this person.
The person, yeah.
So he was active on the battlefield.
Yeah, the discus of the person, the Chesudasan chakra, the person.
One thing that might be interesting to note is that he mentioned that Guru has his wing cut off.
Yeah.
Feather.
Yeah, it's a feather. He got his wing cut, but it's not the whole wing cut.
Actually, he didn't need to drop the feather.
He honored Indra. He wanted to honor Indra's Vajra, a thunderbolt.
Yeah, well, specifically, it's the thunderbolt created by Lord Vishnu. So he wanted to honor Lord Vishnu, actually.
And then it's described that one feather was so big. You know, it's practically as big as the universe. You know, there's a name. What is that name of Garuda that means the one with the big feather? I forget the name. Suparna. Mm-hmm. Suparna means auspicious feather. So it was so big that everyone was shocked. It's just one feather off of his wing. That's Garuda. Yeah?
You have mentioned that the child have his nature and nurture.
Yeah, nature and nurture.
If nurture is wrong, he can become a demonic nature.
Yeah.
But is that the nurture is a part of his karma?
Well, with Bulbasaur, it wasn't karma precisely, it was the Lord's pastime. But yeah, you can say that, but it's also his choice. You're confronted with choices throughout life, and if the choice is, you know, a devotee association or non-devotee association, you're the one. You can't say that's your karma to make the choice. That's you're directly making that choice. You understand? There's certain things that are separate from the law of karma, and that's the choice between Krishna and Maya. When you choose Maya, then it's like getting on the roller coaster. You paid your ticket, you know, you have to continue to the end of the ride. But when you choose, you always have the choice
to get on,
to surrender to Krishna, and that has nothing to do with karma. So he directly chose. He wasn't forced to take bad association. I mean, that's a typical thing that people, nowadays especially, people blame either karma or the devil or Maya or, you know, I'm hopeless or helpless for their own actions. They say, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. They talk about that in my seminar. That's called denial of responsibility. You know, don't blame me that I got angry with you and beat you up. Because I have an anger problem.
there is an exception to what you're saying.
What's the exception?
The exception is you have no power to change any of that until you chant.
Yeah, chant it. Yeah, that's right.
Because you actually are unable to change your choices
until you chant.
The karmic cycle.
Yeah, yeah. Without when you're in the karmic cycle, you're controlled by karma. But you have always have that choice to get out of that karmic cycle. You have a choice to eat it or not eat it.
I mean, in terms of helping to break that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That helps break it. But you still have the choice of Krishna even after that.
Right. But that's enough to, it helps with the, here's what I'm thinking. So when I see my patients and they're stuck in whatever.
It helps give them brains, you know.
Yeah, I'll
give
them prasadam.
Actually, it says give them prasadam first give them prasadam, then eventually they'll.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people come back to me and said, "Oh, I went to church out of the blue."
Really? Yeah. Because it was the prasadam that did that.
Yeah.
It was the prasadam. Yeah. There was somebody giving class the other day in Delhi. I mean, it was just they got the whole philosophy wrong. They said, "Well, we should be careful who we distribute prasadam to, because if you give prasadam to a meat eater, he'll or a butcher, he'll use the energy he gets from eating the prasadam to conduct his nefarious activities, and you'll be responsible for that." That's against our philosophy. Yeah, Yeah. Someone gave a class in Delhi, and they, you know, people wrote me about it, questioning what it was.
Sounds like they're mixing it up the ninth event or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, you give prasadam to everybody. It's up to them what they do with it afterwards.
Right. People tell me they throw it away or give it to their neighbor.
Well, it's up to them what they do with the energy they get from eating the prasadam. That's their choice. Okay. It's a big day tomorrow. Tomorrow is Lord Nityananda's appearance day. It is a fast half the day.